This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural magic in 3, 2, 1.
Anything else?
What else could she do?
As soon as you hit record, the pterodactyl's gonna come out.
Well, before you hit record.
No, after. I've been recording. Thank you, Rebecca. Are we?
Pulling that trick again, are we? Want to make sure you get the content.
just some fun little banter. Why not? We like to call this padding the runtime.
Oh, yeah, because we have a real problem with that.
Starting off in like 30-minute episodes. Yeah, let's go to an hour, maybe two. Nobody cares.
Well, since we're bantering, I'm going to bring this up. As of this recording, not as of when this episode's released, but as of this recording, this is Dave's birthday week. His birthday was two days ago, right?
Yeah, it was.
It's Dave's birthday week.
Yay!
He's Dave. 19. He's 19 years old. And
not quite a woman, and, not quite a lady.
And JR and Reb and I, we planned this massive extravaganza with him that we had 2 days ago. We were in town together with him, really celebrating hard because we none of us have anything else to do.
Love you.
I want to say I'm sorry, Dave, that I didn't say happy birthday on your birthday. I really apologize.
What?
Because that whole day, you know, it's my mother's birthday as well. And that whole day, I'm thinking, oh, I gotta call mom. And I'm just grinding through putting this new office together. And after I had spoken with my mother, you know, I hang up the phone, and I hadn't been on the computer all day. You know, I hop on, you know, check Facebook. Dave's birthday. Oh, jeez.
Dave,
if it makes you feel any better, I almost forgot it was my birthday too.
So that doesn't make me feel better. Actually, that's not good at all.
But Dave, the important thing is I remembered.
Thank you, JR. Thank you for being a good friend.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Yes, Dave. Are we friends or are we family?
I don't have friends. I have family. Who needs birthdays when you have family? Am I right?
My God.
Thank you, though.
Dave, you know, I sent you something on your Facebook wall. It didn't say happy birthday. It just said happy womb evacuation day. But I figured they're the same thing.
I have enough trouble with social media as it is. Like, if it's not podcast related, I don't check it. So
figuring it out, understanding what the buttons do, what emoji should I send today?
Yeah. I only figured out what TikTok was like a couple months ago. So,
oh. So birthday boy, what are we talking about today?
Well, you know, Jeej, today we're blessed to be talking about something special. We're afforded an opportunity that Hollywood seems to rarely afford us, a feature film reboot. I mean, when was the last time that happened? It has been a whopping 20 years, almost to the day, since we have seen a feature film from this franchise. So, much like Fast and the Furious, here's to another franchise that refuses to die, Power Rangers. That's right, Power Rangers. And today we're talking about the 2017 reboot. And I'll start by saying, you know, I was thrilled with this flick. It was so much fun. There's little things here or there that I feel like felt a little flat for me. particularly a little bit with the costume design. But overall, I love revisiting this movie. It's a great origin story, and I especially appreciated the portrayal of the training, you know, cue Rocky montage here. Bryan Cranston was a rock star as Zordon. Elizabeth Banks, I felt like she nailed it as Rita. But I will say, if you loved Goldar as a kid, what else can I say except for I am sorry? Which kind of leads me into how I feel like we could get the discussion started here. So, y'all, this is a reboot. We're coming back to beloved characters. How did you feel about the treatment of our Rangers and villains in this flick? We'll start with you, JR.
Oh, wonderful. You know, when I first heard that they were making a Power Rangers reboot, you know, I'm on board. Don't care who's in it. Don't care if it's good or bad. I am on board. And I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I walked in and I felt like this was Power Rangers Breakfast Club. Because it basically was.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, the only thing I was disappointed in, you know, it might have been the costumes. They had to take some liberties with Goldar, obviously. Every time I see him on
They the took screen, a lot more than liberties with Goldar.
Every time I see him on the screen, I think of Goldmember. I love gold! But, you know, it's really an enjoyable movie. And the one thing that I was not expecting out of this movie happened. And I gotta say, it shocked me to my core when they are fighting and they go, "Let's go to the Zords." And you immediately hear, "Go, go, Power Rangers!" I swear to you, every adult in that theater started cheering.
Yes, absolutely. That's another thing that I really love about this is it felt like a very tactful fan. It had a tactful amount of fan service and delivery of that fan service while still making it its own in a way, you know?
Right. Yeah, I appreciate the nods to the originals with Jason, Tommy, and, you know, Jason David Frank and all them. But I also appreciated that they tried something new. They tried to make, for a lack of a better word, an American Power Rangers. Because let's face it, when we talked about the original Power Rangers movies, I went on about how we basically only got Japanese footage for the TV show. And then the movie just expanded upon that. This is its own, like, entity. Its own American Power Rangers.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and with particularly with the suits and Zord boss fights, I'll put it that way. It felt like a really solid big budget treatment of those things. Like the way that the suits materialized almost. In a way, I felt like I was almost watching like a hybrid between Power Rangers and I don't know, maybe Pacific Rim, I guess. In terms of like the feel of the big budget feature film monster fights. Well, I'll say that.
Fun fact, Pacific Rim was inspired by Power Rangers.
Oh, you don't say.
I mean.
I just wanted to make you.
Really?
I just wanted to.
I'm shocked.
Well, not exactly how I expected you to end the podcast, Rebecca, but thank you for that.
Oh, I got more, but that's okay.
Continue.
I remembered enjoying this for the first time in theaters. I remembered things got real when we saw the Rangers for the first time after they morphed doing that Armageddon walk. And I remember banging my head to the Power Rangers theme song with each Zord running to their into their place, and of course, seeing the original Tommy and Kimberly in the crowd gave me all the warm fuzzies in my heart. So after watching this recently, I decided to go back and rewatch the very first episode of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Now, people may already know this, or they don't, but it's my turn to talk, so I'm going to use my time wisely. And it occurred to me that the 2017 film is episode one for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, just in Breakfast Club point of view. They're the same thing. How I didn't figure this out beforehand, I'll never know. Now, I'm sure some of you might be thinking, Rebecca, you're crazy. Well, of course I am. It's in my resume. But hear me out. The movie and the episode are both completely different in all sorts of traits, but the context is the same. In fact, the Rangers in the movie carry the same traits as the Rangers in the show. Jason was the determined leader who looked out for others. Billy was a shy and nerdy kid. Kimberly was the pretty popular girl in high school. Zach was a cynical wild kid. And Trini was the loner who practiced Tai Chi. They were all chosen by an entity, whether it was Zordon or the Power Corns, to help save the Earth. I mean, the first episode also had Rita enlarging Goldar to fight the Megazord, just like the movie. Coincidence? You wish. Okay, so I wanted to give a small color theory lesson for you guys. So bear with me for a few minutes, okay? After watching the film, I broke down some descriptions of how each Ranger's character represents their color, both negatively and positively. For Jason as the Red Ranger, he started out with anger issues, always being pressured by his dad and his peers, and becomes the ultimate red flag in their eyes, all pun intended. But we also see who he really is under real pressure, under real danger. He has a lot of courage, strength, and desire to protect those weaker than him, even before he becomes the Red Ranger. The humility in his leadership is what draws the others together. Just like how the color red naturally draws the eye to get someone's attention, Jason is practically the sword that is forged into fire and comes out sharp, durable, and swift. Now for Billy, as the Blue Ranger, the color blue can sometimes mean being depressed, passive, and perhaps a bit standoffish. And that's what we first see in Billy. He starts off as a shy, innocent, nerdy, weak kid that has no friends and still mourns the death of his father. But the color blue also means being trustworthy, wise, responsible, and hates conflict. And that's Billy's real character. He hated seeing Jason and Zach fight because he looked upon them as friends and family. He is the peacemaker that calms the storm.
Yeah, that's Billy to a T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Kimberly, as the Pink Ranger, well, we've all seen how Kimberly blames herself for the group's inept ability to morph, because she's guilt-ridden herself after committing a very immature deed that strayed away from her ex-best friend. Now, the color pink does negatively represent immaturity and lack of confidence, but as everyone knows, pink cannot exist without a little bit of red. When Jason tells Kimberly that she did an awful thing, but that doesn't necessarily make her an awful person, and that she could become the person she wants to be. Although, we were never given the impression that Kimberly was an awful person. In fact, we mostly saw her as a compassionate and caring person. We also see her as a playful person when she's with Trini. Those are the traits of the color pink. Those are the traits Kimberly chooses to have and become the beautiful Pink Ranger that she is today. For Zach as a Black Ranger, the unknown is a black area, and Zach fears the unknown. He admits to his friends that he's scared of losing his mother and what life would be like without her. He does all these crazy stunts to relieve himself of that fear and pain, and he has shown a bit of pessimism when talking to Zordon about morphing. All of this is basically the color black. It represents pessimism, sadness, and sometimes apathy. However, we see an unbound strength and sense of protection Zach gives for his sick mother and to his friends. His drive is to shield others from the darknesses in life. He becomes incredibly strong and intimidating as he fights, and still finds humor to keep others upbeat. Sometimes the color black isn't always a dark thing. And finally, for Trini as the Yellow Ranger, Yeah, coloring my drawings, I can tell you right now that the color yellow is a tricky color to pop up. When I'm trying to give it a shade and light, it doesn't necessarily stand out along with other light tone colors, and it can hardly be noticeable.
But it is your favorite.
It is my favorite, and that's how Trini was. Her family was so normal, but she wasn't, and her mother doesn't make it any easier for her when she's overacting. And I do mean overacting. I mean, my God, woman. When she constantly pushes Trini to say or be something that she's not. She was an outcast in her family, and she was not noticeable. And being with the rest of the Rangers made her cautious of getting close. And sometimes, JR, you might like this, but yellow also represents fear after her encounter with Rita.
Ha!
However, also like the color yellow, Trini learns to be more positive and warms up towards the others. In fact, it was her friendship with the Rangers that gave her the strength to tell them what happened between her and Rita and to fight back. She's even happy for the first time in a while with them, even to the point where they almost died together. And like the sun that shines on a new chapter in a day, so does Trini as a Yellow Ranger. So that's my little color theory lesson Power Rangers movie. Yes.
Okay, all right. You covered all of them.
Here's what's green?
I want to see if you can whip this out. Rita was the Green Ranger.
Well, I'll tell you as soon as the sequel comes out.
No, you tell me now.
Okay, sure.
You do as you're told.
Okay, so green. Actually, I haven't really did much research for green, but I'll try and see what I can think of, what I can remember. Green can sometimes be of greed, G-R-E-D, not green, greed, right? Like money, right? So I figure that Rita's lust for gold represented her greed, and the color green represents that as well. Now, I'm sure it means something else. Oh, yes, envy. Green can be envious, too. Rita was... We don't really know much between her and Zordon, and after Jason tells her that Zordon will be the one to judge her, that's where she got triggered there from Zordon be the judge of me? Never. I sense a lot of envy there, but because something happened between her and Zordon that must have obviously clashed and fell apart. That's also part of the color green. And now for positively, well, like the Green Lantern, it's probably, there's a lot of willpower. So there you go, JR.
Ha!
And green is also the color of nature, being natural and in tune with nature. So I would assume that if Tommy was there, he was in the show. He was a natural talent and a natural friend, and he had amazing willpower to keep going.
He did because he was losing his powers for half the show, I feel like, and he kept driving. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. All right. It's interesting you bring up Rita and her envy and her greed and whatnot, because although we don't know exactly what happened between her and Zordon, I do find it interesting that Zordon mentioned Rita was my friend.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, Rita, like she points at all of the Rangers and says, "Do you think what you have can last? It won't last. It's not forever." Or she said, "This can't last. You know it can't last." And so I'm sitting here, you know, watching her accuse them of only being able to maintain their friendship, their love for one another, for so long. And going back to the line that Zordon said, "She was my friend." And I'm thinking there was some sort of betrayal, some sort of hurt there that was just not just on Rita's part. Something fell apart between them.
Yeah.
And just her bid for power.
It was a Revenge of the Sith situation.
I got the high
Zordon
ground,
had
Rita.
The high ground.
He clearly didn't at the beginning of the movie.
This is something I actually really enjoyed about the movie, because we, from the TV show, we know Zordon as this all-knowing, malevolent power, and we've just grown to trust Zordon. And, you know, in this movie, he's like, the only reason they should morph is so I can come back to life. He's using them. So I like that we get more character development out of Zordon and out of Rita, knowing that they were once trying to protect Earth from others. But then, from all we know, the explanation from Zordon is that she just got greedy.
At first, I was a little disappointed how somewhat pessimistic this Zordon was in the movie. However, the more I think about it, this movie was trying to relate to modern times, and that issues are not always in black and white. There's always a gray part, and Zordon behaved rather appropriately. His old team was gone, and he had to rely on complete and total strangers, teenagers for that matter, to finish his mission, and he had a hard time accepting that. It's like what Jason told Zordon, he was just as scared as the rest of them. So, yeah, it does make sense that they needed to give Zordon a bit of a human-like edge, especially after his last encounter with Rita. I also like the idea of how Zordon was the original Red Ranger. I would have liked to know more as to why he came to Earth and his history between him and Rita as the first Power Rangers. I mean, I understand that a film is out of the question, but what about a graphic novel or a small animated film or series? I mean, anyway, both Zordons from the show and movie are completely different, yes. However, they both had their own parental figure attitude towards the Rangers. One was optimistic and hopeful, and the other was stern and cautious. And I think they both fit.
Yeah, I did like how we had a little bit more real, like, down-to-earth, I'll say, version of Zordon, and something that kind of articulated his flaws while still having, as JR said, a benevolent father figure type role.
I mean, it's really hard to follow that up, because I don't know, this whole movie to me was just so interesting. Yes, it was basically episode one of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, just with a deep dive study into it. I love the introduction to all the characters. And one thing I was really surprised about the movie was that they went as far as to make Billy on the spectrum autistic. Because, you know, like we mentioned, I think it was in Justice League, how we don't get many, very, very many autistic superheroes. And for that matter, Billy might have been the most interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because all he wanted was friendship. In the end, he's the one that brought them all together. He's the one that made morphing possible.
Right. I find it so interesting that the one, with autism, who generally those with who are on the spectrum are a little more disconnected from people, was the most, you know, in search of connection and embrace that connection the most of them.
And, you know, hats off to RJ Seiler, who played him, because, like, you know, we've talked about some of the other talent involved here, but huge shout out to RJ. Billy really had a habit of stealing the show whenever he was on the screen.
Agreed.
Billy, I don't want to go to the pit. I mean, Jason, I don't want to go to the pit.
He had such a gentle, commanding presence, I guess is how, right, I would put it.
Mm-hmm. Like every time he got excited, he did the little clap.
I thought that was so cute.
It was cute. I loved it. It was like a genuine happiness.
Yeah. Like, this person is somebody that needs to be treasured.
Mm-hmm. He is a national treasure. You will love him.
Zordon comes up. I'm more of a treasure protector.
I mean, it's kind of hard to say any more than what's already been said, but I love the deep dive into these characters. I love the fact that we don't get so much in the show that Jason's a screw up. And, you know, what does a hero really look like? Like he says to Kim, just because you've done terrible things doesn't make you a terrible person. I think we all can relate to that.
I love that line.
And he was a jerk. He was a screw up. He, you know, literally wrecked two cars. He broke his leg. He almost killed everybody, you know. But in the end, he's the one that, you know, led them. He's the one who kept saying, all right, I don't know what's going on here, but I guarantee you this is where we're going to find answers. Mm-hmm. I guarantee mm-hmm. you that we will find this out together. And yeah, Rebecca, you kind of inadvertently ended the podcast before it even began by showing everybody's colors, their strengths and their weaknesses, because Kimberly, my God, Kimberly, from what I know on the show, you know, Kimberly's just a teenager who, oh my God, always talks like this, and she's a cheerleader, and she's just popular. But
I'm going to be the princess of Agrabah.
But, you know, she had a lot more depth to her here. She did show her compassion, even though she, you know, did something incredibly hurtful, incredibly mean. She wants to atone for it.
Or live with it.
That decision to live with it was when she cut her own hair within like the first 5 minutes.
No, I don't think she liked, because there she did that while looking in the mirror, right?
Right.
And I think she didn't like what she had become. She didn't like
makes more sense.
She had become something so grotesque in her eyes, and she cut her hair off as this sort of like, I can't stand to look at myself. I can't stand to see what I'm seeing in the mirror. So she cut her hair to change a look, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end of the movie, what is she doing? She's looking in the mirror, but this time
she's smiling.
Not disgusted. Yeah, she's not disgusted at herself. It goes back to that line you said, JR. Then, you know, just because you did something awful doesn't make you an awful person. Don't be that person. Be who you want to be. He said, be who you want to be. There's nothing stopping anyone, any of those characters or anyone in reality from being who you want to be. And by the end of the movie, yes, she's going to have to live with what she did. Lots of those characters are going to have to live with what they did. You know, people in real life, we live with horrible things that we've done, but we don't have to let those moments define us. And I don't think she did, which is a beautiful thing about that. And it all piles into this narrative of great affection for one another. You know, I think I'm going to take over for a second here, JR. I think my favorite aspect of this narrative is that the method of morphing in this movie relies on acts of love or acts of selflessness. And, you know, they never really say it outright. There's dialogue that infers that they need to know each other better, but you have to watch what they do, what they feel, to figure out why these miracles happen when they happen. Let's go with the first time. The first time is when we see Billy get upset that Jason and Zach are at each other's throats. You know, he doesn't want the people he loves to fight, so he breaks up the fight of two people he cares about, and boom, he's the first ranger to morph. And when Zach reaches out to feel the armor, it disappears. You know, Zach at that point probably doesn't feel the same way just yet. They're not all on the same page, Billy is. So the armor sort of, you know, sniffs Zach and goes, ew, and hides, right?
yeah.
And then when they open the morphing grid after Billy has died, it was because they all admitted their love for one another. They admitted their lives are worth sacrificing for one another. And the grid opened long enough to bring Billy back. And that love for one another enabled them to morph, to go to battle, right? And then one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when Goldar is pushing all of the Zords into the Zeo Crystal Pit. The Zords are on fire. Zach's having a hard time breathing. And Jason says, "No one dies alone." And then Billy, God bless this character who just wanted friends to love and loves them so much.
God, don't do it. I'm going to start tearing up now.
Right. No, I did the same thing last night when I was watching.
Thank you for being my friends.
Billy, believing he's going to die, says, "Thank you for being my friends."
Is this the first time? There's no crying in podcasting.
It's are you kidding me? And then right before they all go over the edge, as if "thank you for being my friends" wasn't enough, right before they all go over the edge, Kimberly yells, "Hold on to each other." And I want to take a moment to sit on that line. Sure, it sounds like she was saying, you know, like physically hold on to one another as they topple over, right? But we use the words hold on to each other, hold on to one another as an idiom, meaning to preserve relationships with specific people or to cherish the memories with specific people. So when Kimberly told the Rangers this double entendre, hold on to each other, the desire to preserve these cherished relationships unlocked yet another power, the Megazord. And the Megazord, it literally embodied a preservation of their relationships. Literally, it is them holding together. And the Megazord has always been a symbol of unity among a group of individuals, but here it is formed out of love for one another. And, you know, this movie doesn't have the theme song "Power of Love," though it is certainly applicable. There's no Dumbledore spoon feeding the audience that love is the greatest power. We are watching the actions and the tears of characters loving one another harder and harder as this film progresses. And the more they love one another and the more they refuse to leave one another, the greater the powers they unlock. And that's the core of Power Rangers. If you strip away the tokusatsu, the obsession with flashy poses, the martial arts, the core theme is teamwork and unity, neither of which work to its fullest without extraordinary adoration. And this Power Rangers, this iteration of Power Rangers, explores the love the team has for one another through the connectivity of their powers. And that is just a brilliant take on the franchise, a great way to tie in their unity to their powers. And that's it right there. Love is what connects their teamwork to their powers. I just find the execution emotionally gripping with that concept. And it's what makes this movie work so well for me.
Yeah, it's hard to set, like, I can see why people didn't appreciate the movie. They didn't like it as, you know, what they were expecting. But you're right. I mean, deep down, this is the essence of Power Rangers. That's why I affectionately call this Breakfast Club Power Rangers. Because that's what it is. These kids are getting to know each other. They're opening up to one another, like much like they did in Breakfast Club in the library when they were like, "Why are you in detention? Why are you in detention?" You know,
right?
And it's
directly referencing Breakfast Club. Yeah,
it is. But you're right. The connection is what makes them a team. What makes them, dare I say it, family. How many times do we talk about family on this podcast?
Family. None of us can do a Vin Diesel impression. What is wrong with us?
I look like Vin Diesel.
Every time I try to do a Vin Diesel impression, I end up sounding like Sylvester Stallone.
you just desperately want to sound like Sylvester Stallone.
No, you know.
I'll find a pole, maybe I won't.
Okay, boo-boo.
What was that? I mentioned that one of my favorite scenes was the Zord scene where they got pushed over into the Zeo Crystal and became the Megazord. My favorite scene, however, is actually the campfire scene. And I do want to get some thoughts on that. It's weird that it's my favorite scene because it's everything I usually can't stand. It's a lot of exposition, but it felt so natural and so necessary, especially when like Billy and Zach admitted being with the team was good for them, better for them or whatever. And that really struck a chord. And the jokes they sprinkle in between the emotional beats that they admit to each other made it feel a little more real. Like it wasn't levity for the audience watching them. It was the characters trying to ease their own tension. After all the goodwill built in that scene, Trini poses the worrisome question. And it comes up again when Rita at the end says, "This can't last." She says, "Are we friends or are we Power Rangers?" Which shows that they're just not quite there yet. They're all so different and come from different worlds, but we know they have the capacity to get there, and we're rooting for that. It was a really beautiful scene and risky too, given the exposition.
Well, I think it's really easy to throw a campfire scene in a movie and have it just fall really flat because it lacks so much authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
The inverse of that is you get Star Trek, and you started talking about the campfire singing in my head. I was like, row, 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 row your boat. In all seriousness, like that, it reminds me of that, right? It's not, well, of course, it's at different context, different relationships, but from a striving for authenticity part, like campfire it has like an innate catharsis to it. And I feel like this film leveraged that feel to bring down some walls, to present some vulnerability that got them to get them closer, to build those relationships in that moment. And you're right, GJ. It was beautiful.
I think the authenticity of that, I feel like it was very, of course it was very personal, but it was very personal to me because I've actually had some of those moments at a campfire where, you know, you're in the moment and you start sharing. I'm not saying I share personally, but I've had friends who have, you know, opened up to me and admitted their problems. So to me, that's what made that scene so authentic and so realistic, because the jokes, like G was saying, they're not for the audience. They're for themselves. They're trying to lighten the mood and be like, "I'm not crying. You're crying. Shut up." Because that's what I was doing in this movie. I was crying.
Yeah. I think the tears are warranted,
which is weird. I mean, yeah, I've always been like, Power Rangers, warm feeling in my heart, yay, teamwork. But to actually cry at a Power Rangers movie, I was like, this is unusual, but it's welcomed. Because even though these aren't the actors I grew up with, these are the characters I've grown up with. And this is what the deeper meaning of Power Rangers is. And God bless them. I actually think some of the later series of Power Rangers
have been taking
getting to this point.
Yeah, I.
And GJ, we were just talking about this 5 minutes ago.
We were
with that with Beast Morphers and the mom finding out that her daughter is the Yellow Ranger.
I saw that clip.
It's, you know,
spoilers.
Here's how transcendent the characters and writing are in this movie. I find the Ranger suits mediocre. They've grown on me, but I'm still not a fan. I'm no fan of the Zord designs, and I absolutely hate the Megazord design, but I love this movie. And the characters work so well that I don't care about all that other stuff, which actually, you know, isn't the first time this has happened to me with a Power Rangers show. JR, I'm reminded of Power Rangers RPM, which was the last Disney season of Power Rangers. And to this day, I do not like those suits or zords.
I remember just going, GJ, trust me.
Yeah, no, you had to convince me because I looked at the designs and I was like,
why do the zords have googly eyes?
Googly eyes, and they address that. But that was easily one of the best Power Rangers seasons. Maybe even the best. I don't know, but it's up there. So when I think I can understand the desire to want more action sequences, more martial arts, more of the kind of campy humor and references to tokusatsu in Power Rangers. I totally get that. And I think that was probably my original complaint with the movie when I first saw it. But it really, you know, it's kind of funny. This movie gives Power Rangers a chance to really be its own thing. Because no matter what, when Power Rangers comes, a new season of Power Rangers comes on TV, it's intrinsically tied to another Japanese show, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has to use footage, action sequences and footage from another TV show. It's never really fully its own thing. And although this movie was highly, highly, highly inspired by Power Rangers or Super Sentai, it takes advantage of the opportunity to really be its own thing, its own Power Rangers, while still giving us just enough for us to be like, no, this is obviously Power Rangers multi. Yeah, no, this works. And the core themes have never been so prevalent in a Power Rangers story.
I've been wanting to talk about this. I need to be critical about the designs of the Zords and the Megazord. Okay.
Be critical. Swing away, Meryl.
Sing, you canary.
Cam Winston? Was that you?
Okay, I thought the Zords looked all right, except
hideous is the word you're looking for, actually. I'm just
artist here. I'm talking.
Wow.
My podcast. I'm talking.
Did anybody notice the Mastodon Zord or the Beetle Zord or the Big Bad Beetle Zord? I mean, I liked how they built in arsenals and cannons where you could see them. What I wish they could have done was make them more animalistic looking. As I said before, the Mastodon Zord did not look like a mastodon. For starters, it had six legs. I didn't see its trunk or its giant musks, teeth, things, and I couldn't make out where the face was. In fact, I had a hard time making out where all the faces were in each sword, except for the Tyrannosaurus Zords, obviously. And I think it mostly had to do with the fact that we were seeing less of the Zords and more of the reactions from the Rangers, which was typical even during the television series. Okay. I personally would have liked it if each Ranger grew some sort of bond with their Zord, giving them more character and story, and not just for the sole reason of being made for toys. Yes, I'm aware they did that anyway for the television series, but that's just wishful thinking on my part. And speaking of faces, where was Megazord's face? I'm not against different designs. In fact, I welcome it. However, sometimes there are designs that just don't feel right or rubs the wrong way for me. I liked how it was technologically organic with the muscles for the hands and arms and legs, but I don't think it would have hurt to give it a face. Maybe the artistic idea was that friendship and love doesn't need one face, and how all the Rangers together were the face to represent their friendship and teamwork as Megazord. I don't know. Either way, it just didn't do it for me. It didn't look like Megazord as much as it looked like an athletic version of Soundwave from Transformers Prime. It just... Ugh.
Rebecca.
What?
Call the 541.
I will.
TJ might have been the only person to get that joke.
Nah, yeah. To quote Dave, I'm smelling what you're stepping in.
So Rebecca did not care much for the design.
No, I mean, I can agree with G and Rebecca. I wasn't much for the design of them. I enjoyed the line, they were inspired by the dinosaurs, but yeah, I still didn't like the designs.
Except for Mastodon, a giant freaking beetle just roaming around. Just
Rebecca, have you taken a look at the concept art for this movie?
Once, but that was a while back.
You would remember the concept art.
the concept work for the Zords was actually a lot. There were a lot better ideas, I thought. Ideas that looked closer to what we wanted and looked closer to some original designs you've given the Zords. It's kind of a shame they went with this over those.
Whoever was in charge of that, they're the reason why there's not going to be a sequel.
Rebecca throwing some shade this episode.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Whew. Do we cut that, Dave?
Yeah. Any other final thoughts before we wrap this up?
We need more Billy.
Yeah, we do need more Billy. Wanted to give a few names a shout out. One is the director, Dean Israelite, who this was his second feature film. And I really applauded him for coming up with a look that was separate of other superhero flicks. It doesn't look like the MCU, which none of those have a really independent look from one another. And it didn't have this kind of muted color slash excessive slow motion of Zack Snyder's movies. In fact, there were a lot of moments in this movie that were shot like a documentary with lots of kind of over the shoulder mounted shots, lots of contrast lighting. And physical sets and costumes.
Yes.
Physical sets of costumes. My God. The big thing now, especially.
The pit.
Especially in the MCU, is to CG the costumes onto the actors. But the suit designs are so complex in this movie. It would have been really easy to do that. But they made sure that the suits and were functioning physical costumes. I really have to applaud that. And I also want to briefly mention Brian Tyler's score.
Thank you.
Yeah, here we go. I thought you would.
Uh-huh. This is the most beautiful score ever.
I know this is one of your favorite scores, JR.
Oh my God. Somebody asked me on Twitter today what one of my calming scores is that I listen to.
Comfort scores,
comfort,
right?
Yes, comfort scores. Number two is this. Mm-hmm. Number three. But yes, this is up there. I listen to this all the time.
You know, and we brought Brian Tyler up in our Dragon Ball Evolution episode. You guys can go back and listen to that one. But the man can't write a bad score.
No, he really can. Transformers Prime.
Prime, Iron Man 3, Thor, Dark World, Now You See Me, and of course the Fast and Furious movies. I won't say this with certainty. JR, you probably can. But it would be very easy to make the argument that Power Rangers is his best score.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
not only that, like, he has... All right, so in...
I don't know. I think Transformers Prime is pretty much up there.
I knew Rebecca was going to be back for that.
But what I really love about... He pays homage to the original score, where in the movie, when the Zords come out, you hear the actual "Go Go Power Rangers" in the score, in the actual score. It's actually called "Let's Ride." It builds up to it. It slowly does the da 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 da, and then it goes up into dun dun da 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 da.
Yeah, it's an old score.
Wow 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 wow.
It's
very instrumental. It's very rock, but it's not. It's not overly 80s. It's very complimentary to the rest of the score.
Mm-hmm.
You mean 90s.
90s, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree. And Tyler's original theme for this movie, it was crafted more toward the character drama than it was the action, which I think was wise. In fact, my favorite variation of the main theme is heard during the campfire scene.
Yeah.
His main thing kind of played on guitar, I think.
Mine
acoustically plucked.
Yeah,
and that
mine is actually the scene. You've done a bad thing that doesn't make you a bad person. The talk between Jason and Kimberly. It's a very haunting thing. Mm. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great stuff. Great stuff. I think Dave, I guess what I really want to end on is this movie was very rare for me, and I can't think of too many films where I saw it in theaters, didn't like it, and reversed my opinion. In fact, often what happens is I see a movie, I like it at first, or I think I like it, and as time goes on, I find that it's not as interesting or entertaining as I initially thought. I'm in this honeymoon phase with movies I see for the first time, and I have to come back from vacation with it to look at it more objectively or accept things that bother me about it.
You gotta take it home, feed it dinner. Yeah.
You don't realize what you've done until you come back home from the vacation. And Power Rangers, I did not like when I first saw it. I walked out of the theater fairly ambivalent of what I watched, but I was called back to it for some reason. And I saw it again. Rebecca, I think I saw it with you again in theaters, didn't I?
I don't recall, but go on. Can't,
but and it was... It was a better experience. I caught things, nuances I didn't notice before that improved the viewing. And I was compelled enough to buy the film and watch it again and again and again and again and again. And I can say without a doubt that Power Rangers ended up being my favorite film of 2017.
Amen.
Which is a pretty insane declaration for me. This was the same year as Wonder Woman or Dunkirk, Shape of Water, Disaster Artist.
Oh, God.
and I think what strikes me so real about this film over those other titles was the dedication to the theme of which it is so dependent on, and is so dependent on the characters and how they treat each other and how they learn to treat each other. And there are big emotional beats in this film that are the payoff, not the action sequences, but the character beats, the focus, that importance made me fall in love with these iterations of the characters who we all feel so real in its own exaggerated way, and like an extension of the TV show's teamwork theme.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. We have a Twitter question, guys.
Woohoo! I
always love these.
Kaiju Mecha Samurai asks us, in your opinion, what were the reasons why the movie failed to live up to expectations? For example, the decision to spend too much time on character development for most of the film and then introduce Power Rangers in the final 20 to 30 minutes was a huge problem, in my opinion. Thank you for your question, Kaiju Mecha Samurai.
First of all, I find it funny how character development is a problem. I'm sorry. I can't.
Can I take this one?
Yeah, take it.
Okay. I can understand why that would be a letdown to you, Kaiju Mecha _ Samurai, and many others. I'll be honest, I wasn't so sure about the whole Power Rangers meets the Breakfast Club scenario at first, but watching it again, I remember Jason telling Billy to forget about being a team of superheroes and let's just go kill Rita. Yeah, that seems dark, but at the same time, it showed me that they were already Power Rangers at that point. Sure, they weren't able to morph, but it was because of the reality sinking into them that everyone they knew and loved was going to die if they don't kill this psycho. This is going to sound super sacrilegious to you and many others, but it's not the armor nor the swords that make them Power Rangers. It's the character and the choices they make. Look at Rita Repulsa. She was a Power Ranger once, and she still wears some of her Green Ranger armor. Does that still make her a Power Ranger? Of course not. She chose to do evil. Evil. She chose to do... She chose Pole.
She chose Evo. I think the reason it failed was because a lot of people were expecting the 10 minutes of dialogue, 30 minutes of fighting. You know, I think a lot of people went in with a certain expectation, and when that expectation wasn't met, they were like, don't go see this movie, it's awful. And they failed to see what all of us see in this movie is the heart of the Power Rangers. And they just weren't satisfied with the 30 minutes of fighting that we got and the design of the Megazord and the Zords. I mean, I think if I remember the commercials correctly, we only saw the Armageddon walk and then like a flash of the Zords. So everybody was probably thinking, oh, they're saving the good stuff for the theater. But in reality, they pretty much showed us the movie.
You know, I'll be honest. I think the reason it failed is because it came out in the same month as Logan, Skull Island, and the week after that awful Beauty and the Beast remake. There were enough blockbusters going on that month that it just didn't have a chance. Plus, I think Power Rangers is more of a niche franchise than a lot of fans are willing to accept. It's not as big of a property as it is built up in our heads, which is fine. I kind of get tired of certain properties beating me over the head, but and plus it makes it more like, this is mine. You know, this little unpopular thing, it's mine. I can have it. I can cuddle with it.
Yes, it's unpopular, but it's my unpopular thing.
Right. It doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that it's not connecting with certain audiences these days. And I'll be honest, I had a lot of the same complaints as Mecha Kaiju Samurai did when I first saw it. It's a Power Rangers movie. You expect more action and martial arts, right? And while I've come to love this film as Power Rangers reimagined as a drama, I admit I could have used maybe a little more fighting, but I'm not bothered by what we got either. If anything, should more action have been added, I would have just contained it to the third act. Maybe just extend some things by a minute or two. Because quite frankly, I found it refreshing that we weren't bludgeoned over the head by action sequences throughout the film. You know?
Yeah, if you want that, go watch Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yeah, Godzilla vs. Kong or Transformers or just lots of blockbusters these days overdo it, that by the time we get to the third act, I'm kind of tired of the fighting and explosions. I get bored. And I think a great example is, I want to preface this by saying I love the first Wonder Woman. I really do. But the final battle against Ares, I think, it was Ares, right? It's been a while.
Ares.
I was bored. I was tired of the boom boom and was ready for the movie to conclude. So the fact that I was sort of left wanting more action out of a Power Rangers movie, of all things, I'm kind of fine with. I understand the complaint, but the more important parts, the character parts, were done so well that I just don't mind.
I appreciated the emotional weight. And, you know, if in an ideal world, we would have a sequel and that emotional weight would carry over into that and give us more opportunity to have those action scenes. But obviously, we're not getting a sequel with this cast of talent,
which is unfortunate.
It is.
This is very unfortunate.
But it does make me.
And we know who to blame.
You know, it makes me appreciate the movie that much more. To paraphrase Kimberly, hold on to it.
Speaking of things we'll hold on to, I think we have Poorly Pitched up next here. That was a poorly pitched transition. Anyway, who had it last week?
Lackluster.
who did have it last time?
I had it last time.
Okay, go for it. Okay.
And if you don't remember, it went something like this. A family squabble breaks out when his best friend's wife is kidnapped. All right, guys, hit me with your best guesses.
The whole 10 yards?
Bingo!
Wow!
Well done.
That's actually very impressive.
That just came up.
Incredibly impressive.
That was a guess, I swear.
Nice.
Good guess.
That is a good guess. Good grief.
Do you like your father for Oz? I hated my father. With a stab in the eye with a pickaxe.
I could be a great father. I could teach him how to play baseball. I've always seen him with a bat.
Who's got one?
I got one. I'll do one.
Go for it.
All right. You guys ready for this?
Yes.
A purple jungle man kills Shang Tsung. Poorly pitched.
Oh, wonderful. All right.
What?
Look forward to that and more on the next episode of The Drift Space.
Purple Jungle Man.
Next up, we got Fanboy 50s. Who Arnie? Would like to go first?
I'll go first.
Alrighty then, JR. Are you ready, sir?
I am the year 2020, the year of our Lord. I am ready.
All right. Well, go then.
All right. Well, not a lot has been tickling my fancy right now. A lot of the shows that I complained about ending last few episodes ago have been renewed for season 2, which makes me incredibly happy, including The Bad Batch. Speaking of Power Rangers, the Lightning Collection is coming out with the comic version of the crossover Power Rangers meets TMNT. And I gotta say, these figures actually look really dope. And I'm probably gonna collect them all because they just look, they look amazing. And I should read the comic because the comic looks ridiculous. Shredder's the Green Ranger. Don't know how that happened, but it did happen. Bank my time. Oh, you don't have to bank it.
No, no banking.
Not today, sir.
Who's up?
Okay.
GJ. Okay.
All right.
GJ. All right. Set. Go.
All right. Keeping up with the theme of Power Rangers, I actually finished Power Rangers Beast Morphers today, which JR is fully aware of. And I mentioned earlier in the show that Power Rangers RPM was one of the best Power Rangers seasons. I would have to say this is probably the best Power Rangers season since that one. Hop on board. I was not expecting that villain reveal.
Right?
Yeah, no, I was
Oh my gosh!
Also, getting more Ultraman shows down the pipeline. We got Ultraman Tiga, Gaia, and Dinah coming in. They were the 90s, popular 90s Ultraman series. I'm looking forward to them hitting North America very, very soon here. So they should come out this October, November, I believe.
Time. Rebecca?
Dave, why don't you go next? I want to go last.
Why do you want to go last?
Just trust me.
Because it's Herc podcast.
Okay. Well, yeah, good point. This is going to be short. I'll time myself. Dave, are you ready? Set. Go. I've been working a metric ton. So I haven't had a lot of time to do fun things recently. However, for my birthday, my wife did get me a waffle maker. Oh, that's pretty cool. And
the simple things.
And a Lego Batman bust, which is also pretty dope. What? Can't wait to actually get to build that out. The only other thing that I can really think of is I did watch Gunpowder Milkshake. And if you enjoy Shoot 'Em Up and Leon the Professional, then you will like Gunpowder Milkshake. That is all.
Okay, you finished out with just 10 seconds left or so. So that's fine. All right. You're speaking you dropped some titles that intrigued me. All right.
You got to love growing up, buying waffle makers and Lego Batman busts.
Hey, that's
adult stuff.
Yeah, apparently I'm 19, so I guess that's the hot thing for 19-year-olds.
It's a mature 19.
Like a 33-year-old, like a 33 at heart.
You know, why 33?
A receding hairline 18-year-old.
About that.
I have no hair anymore, so joke's on you. That's why I did it.
Joke's still on you. I have no hair also.
Well, no, joke's on somebody else then, because we both don't have hair.
Jokes on Rebecca.
Jokes on Rebecca. Go.
Okay. Anyway, this is not really anything to geek out over. This is actually something serious. I recently found out that my Spanish teacher from high school was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she's literally an angel from heaven. She's like a third grandmother to me, and she taught me so many things other than Spanish. She's always went the extra mile for me and all of her students. And when I found out about her diagnosis, my whole day stopped, and I literally went through the whole five stages of grief in one day. I was not right. She she's everything to me, and she was everything to me in high school and still is. And I'm told that she's going to have her surgery at the end of September, and she will undergo 3 to 4 weeks of radiation therapy. And I don't want to imagine what that would be like.
Time?
No, let her keep going.
She means a lot to me, and she's one of the primary people in my life who helped me become the person I am today. A couple of alumni from my high school have created a GoFundMe page to help her financially, and if anybody would like to help her out, feel free to contact me for my Linktree app, and I will send you the link. I'm not trying to pressure anybody under any circumstances. I just mostly wanted to say a little something about her.
And we can also put that link in the show notes as well.
I think we should. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll keep her in our prayers.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
And that is going to do it for this episode of The Drift Space. Thank you for joining us in our discussion of Power Rangers, the 2017 reboot. I'm Dave, and I do another geek podcast with my wife called Pizza and Parsecs, and you can check us out at pizzaandparsecs.com.
My name is G. You can find me on Twitter at Gman of Mysterioid. You can also check out my Substack, Deferential Wrath of a Rusting Markalite Cannon, at markalite.substack.com.
And I am JR. You can reach me on Twitter at littleman_says1. And I've also got the Instagram where I do cosplays, littlemancosplay.
And I'm Rebecca. If you'd like to check out some of my artwork, you can find me on the Linktree app, linktr.ee/reb.hudge. And commissions are still open. Post up the link to the GoFundMe for my Spanish teacher on our Twitter and on my Linktree app.
And we are The Drift Space. And I'd just like to take a moment here, gentle listener. Thank you for being you. I know we might not be close as we used to, but I miss you, and I do think about you from time to time.
The nights are lonely. You don't call, you don't text.
And we certainly appreciate you joining in on the fun here, but the fun doesn't stop there. Make sure you're hitting us up on our socials and join us on the fun there, at The Drift Space. Facebooks, Twitters, Instagrams. And if you really appreciate us, head on over to iTunes and leave us a whopping 5-star rate and review. 5-star reviews are a great way to get the word out about a small podcast, and we would greatly appreciate it. For all of our other stuff, links to podcatchers, socials, and more, head on over to bit.ly/TDSlinks. You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say it anyway. Always stay strapped.
It's Morphin Time!
He said it.